were talking about cellular genetics. We ended up, I believe, talking about the genome. The genome was a total of an individual's genes. Now, when we talk about cellular genetics, again, really what we're talking about, DNA, RNA, and those types of molecules. Can anybody remember what class of molecule DNA and RNA was?
Nucleic acid.
A what?
Nucleic acid.
Okay, it's a nucleic acid. And nucleic acids, if you remember, are made up of subunits or functional groups that we call what? You guys need to know this for the finals review. They're made up of nucleotides, remember that? Okay, and nucleotides are made up of three things, a phosphate, a sugar, and a base group, okay, a nitrogenous base. And so when we look at DNA, for example, in DNA there are only four different nucleotides that we can find in DNA. First of all, again, what does DNA stand for? Okay, deoxyribonucleic acid. So actually the sugar here in DNA is a deoxyribo sugar. That's where we get the name deoxyribo part of the DNA. Okay, so the deoxyribos is a type of sugar here. They have a phosphate group and then there's a nitrogenous base. And what makes these nucleotides different in DNA are the nitrogenous bases. There are only four different types of nitrogenous bases that are found in DNA. There's what we call adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. Okay. Generally, or sometimes we can abbreviate these bases, these nitrogenous base names, just by letters. So generally, for example, A stands for adenine when you see A in a DNA molecule, or T stands for thymine, and so forth. Okay. So A, T, C, and G are the abbreviations. So there are four DNA nucleotides that can be found. The DNA nucleotide with deoxyribo sugar, a phosphate, and then adenine. And then, of course, the other nitrogenous bases, there's thymine, cytosine, and guanine. Now, what we find with DNA is that DNA is a double-stranded helical molecule. Okay. So in other words, when we see DNA, it actually has two strands. And these two strands bond together in the middle. The nitrogenous bases bond together using hydrogen bonding. And then these DNA molecules are actually helical in nature, so that even though they're bonded together, they kind of twist. So it's almost like, it shows here in the picture, it's kind of like a twisted ladder or a spiral staircase is how DNA looks. Okay. So when we see DNA bonding together, these bases from the nucleotides, they actually bond using hydrogen bonding. So it's actually kind of a weak, well, it's the weakest type of bond that's found between the DNA molecules, but it's still a bond, right? Something's better than nothing, I guess you could say. And so when we see these bases bonding together, we always find the same types of bases bonding together. A always bonds to T, and C always bonds to G, or adenine always bonds to thymine, and cytosine always bonds to guanine, okay? And those are what we call complementary base pairs, right? So A and T are complementary base pairs. C and G are complementary base pairs, right? So if we look at this strand of DNA here, you can see that this nucleotide here has adenine in it. This one has thymine, and the thymine bonds to adenine. Same thing here, T to A, C to G, A to T, and so forth. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, if you were to go and get your DNA sequenced, okay, and you can find the DNA sequencing of a lot of different organisms on the web now, it's, at least in my mind, it's not that interesting. Okay. And the reason why it's not that interesting is because all you'll find in a DNA sequencing is on the internet is it'll look something like this. Just a bunch of letters, okay? And it's only one of four letters. Does that make sense to everybody? And so it's just, that's basically what DNA sequencing is. It's just looking at the sequence those bases come in DNA. All right.
So is there like a certain like order that they have to bond? I mean, like, can A bond with any of them and T bond with any of them, or does it have to be?
No, A always bonds to T and C always bonds to G. Okay. But the order that they come in the DNA really determines what types of proteins are going to be produced, and we'll talk about how that occurs.
Does the order matter where it's like flipped, where AT or TA?
No, because they're complementary strands. And we'll show, I'll show you that here in
just a minute. So like if you wrote it on the board up there, you could run AAA instead of ATT? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically. All right. So basically these DNA is a double-stranded helix, okay? And again, it's basically made up of one of four nucleotides. And those four nucleotides have complementary base pairs. So this is just showing again A bonding to T and C bonding to G. And notice between cytosine and guanine, there are three hydrogen bonds. Between adenine and thymine, there are only two hydrogen bonds. That's fairly important, but probably not too important for this class. Really what I want you to know is that they bond together using hydrogen bonding. And it has to do with the structure of the molecule. You'll also notice that A and G here are double-ringed nitrogenous bases. C and T are single-ring nitrogenous bases. And just kind of shape-wise, there's some other reasons for this, chemical reasons, but if you think about the space in between the latter here, if you want all of your rungs the same size, so to speak, then what you have to have is you have to have a double ringed nitrogenous base bond with a single ring nitrogenous base, and that's why C always bonds to G and T always bonds to A, is because there's a double ring and a single ring and a double ring and a single ring. Does that kind of make sense to everybody? Okay, so you couldn't have like C bond to T, okay, because that would narrow down the DNA too much, or you couldn't have G bond to A because it would widen it out. Now the reason why C can't bond to A is there's some chemical properties that prevent them from bonding very easily. But does that kind of make sense? So there's a double ring bonded to a single ring. Okay. Now, when we talked about the cell cycle, we talked about the S period of interphase. Remember that? What happened in the S period of interphase? Okay, DNA replication or DNA synthesis, okay? So how does DNA synthesis occur? Well, if we were to make a strand of DNA up here, and let's just, I'm just making this up, so it may not make sense too much. Okay, if this were one strand of DNA, what would the complementary strand of DNA look like? It'd be T. What's the complementary base for T?
A.
G.
C.
T.
A.
C.
G.
T. A. C. Okay? So if this were our strand of DNA, what were these little lines in here? That represents the phosphate and sugar, okay? And then these bonds in here represent hydrogen bonding between the different bases, okay? When DNA replication occurs, what happens is there are enzymes that come in and cause these hydrogen bonds to break in between the two strands. Now, it doesn't break the whole way down the DNA strand. In some cases, they call it unzipping the DNA because it kind of goes base by base. So when this bond breaks here, this first hydrogen bond, what we add is we add another complementary base for T, which is what?
A.
We add a complementary base for A, which is T, right? Okay. Then the next hydrogen bond breaks here in DNA replication, and we get what? T and A here. Okay, then those two bond together like that. Then we break this hydrogen bond here. We get T, and up here we get A. Okay, and so it basically unzips, and as it unzips, as it shows here, two new strands of DNA are formed. Okay, any questions about that? So we could actually do the complementary bases here, right? It would just be C, G, A, T, G, C, A, T, G. And the complementary bases up here would be what? G, C, T, A, C, G, T, A, C. Okay? Any questions about that?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Where does it then get all the, because you're saying, you know, it's replicating its ones, bringing the new ones, where do those come from?
Okay, where do the new nucleotides come from? They come from the cell. Okay, so the cell basically puts those molecules together, and there are a number of places where they can get those molecules or the components to make those molecules. One of the main places where they get the components to make the molecules is from the food that you eat. Does that make sense? So some of the nutrients are brought, say for example, in a human, it's brought into the cell. The chemical components are changed. The molecules are changed to make these molecules. They can also get it from recycling old DNA sometimes, but at least for the purposes of this class, just kind of assume that there's always enough nucleotides laying around. Okay, but they essentially come from food, from production of proteins, those types of things, from old DNA. Very rarely, if ever, do cells not have the nucleotides, and the reason why is because the most important thing they can do, or the maybe I should say the most important thing that they do is produce DNA and RNA. Without DNA and RNA, you don't have a cell, right? And so kind of the first priority is to make these nucleotides for a cell. Okay, any other questions? Yeah.
Does it necessarily have to be in order going this way? Because you have like PAABC, like it just matters that it bonds to the right
thing. Yeah, so in other words, these are the complementary bases here.
And they don't have to be in any certain order.
Yeah, the order here is actually going to tell us eventually what types of proteins are going to be made. So this is the DNA sequence. So if you were to sequence your DNA, it would look something like this. And they just assume what the complementary base pairs are. Does that make sense? So the opposite strand is the only part of the DNA that has those complementary base pairs. But notice here, this is kind of important. If you look at these two DNA strands, what do you notice about them? They're identical. Does that make sense? Okay. In other words, this DNA strand up here is exactly the same as this DNA strand here. Now, why could that happen? It's not magic, by the way. Well, if you have two strands of DNA and they're complementary to one another, if they each form a new strand of DNA that's complementary to themselves, it's going to be the same as the first strand that it was bonded to. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? So basically, these two strands are identical, and that's how DNA synthesis occurs in the S period of interphase. Okay? Any other questions about that? Now, during this period of DNA replication, sometimes mutations can occur. This is one place where mutations can occur. Let me just kind of go back here and give you a hypothetical that may happen. Let's say we only have... I'm just going to... Let's say we only unzip the DNA to this point right here, okay? And what could happen is this. We could actually have an enzyme that breaks that bond there and breaks this bond here. And it may also, say, break this bond, okay? So as the DNA unzips, what's going to happen is this little piece of DNA is going to be kind of left out of the whole process. Does that make sense? So what can happen is the cell could actually fix the DNA, and that's typically what happens, okay? Or it could actually flip it over and put it in place. Or it could take it and put it up here, or flip it over and put it up here. In other words, it tries to fix the DNA, okay? It may put it in the wrong place, and when it does that, that's what can cause a mutation. All right? Or it can just say, this is what happens a lot of times in bacterial DNA. Basically, the bacteria says to itself, what's this little piece of DNA doing here? It must not be too important, and so they'll just recycle it. Okay? You guys have all done that. Well, maybe not all of you. But if you've ever put like an engine back together or something in a car, you know, you end up with a few extra bolts and you look at them and try and think where they could possibly have come from, and then, they must not be too important, right? And you chuck them in the garbage, right? It's kind of what happens with DNA, okay? Sometimes. And that's how mutations occur, right?
I can see some of you guys smiling. You've done that before, right? Okay.
So that's basic. That's one of the basic ways in which mutations can occur in the DNA when DNA is replicating. Okay. There are other ways in which mutations can occur as well, but that's probably good enough. Okay. Any questions about DNA replication? Now let's take a look at RNA. With RNA, RNA is a little bit different from DNA. One of the things that makes RNA different from DNA is that, first of all, RNA has some similar nucleotides, or some nucleotides that are similar to the nucleotides found in DNA, but they also have some nucleotides that are very different from those found in DNA. Now, first of all, the nucleotides in RNA are always going to be different from those found in DNA. And the reason why is because of the sugar. If you remember, DNA stands for what? Deoxyribonucleic acid. And what did the deoxyribose stand for? The deoxyribose sugar, right? Okay. So what does RNA stand for? Ribonucleic acid. So the sugar that's found in RNA is ribose. The sugar that's found in DNA is deoxyribose. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's one major difference. Notice as well that some of the same nitrogenous bases are used in RNA that are used in DNA. For example, here we have adenine, found that in DNA, right? Cytosine and guanine were both found in DNA. Okay. The one base that we find in RNA that is not found in DNA is uracil. Right? So uracil essentially in RNA takes the place of thymine in DNA. And actually, U becomes a complementary base to A instead of T, all right, in RNA. Any questions about that? So if we were looking at strands of RNA and we had the base adenine, if it was an RNA molecule, instead of having a T here, okay, since there's no thymine in RNA, you would actually have U as a complementary base, okay? Does that make sense to everybody? So basically, U replaces T in RNA. Or uracil replaces thymine in RNA. Okay? Any questions about that? Now, another major difference between RNA and DNA is that RNA is a single-stranded molecule. It's not a double-stranded helix. Remember, DNA, we had two strands of nucleotides. RNA only has a single strand of nucleotides. So there are three major differences between RNA and DNA. RNA and DNA, okay? The first major difference is that DNA has a deoxyribose sugar, RNA has a ribose sugar, okay? Second major difference is that thymine is in DNA is replaced by uracil in RNA. And the third major difference is that DNA is a double-stranded helix, RNA is a single-stranded molecule. Okay. Any questions about that? Now there are basically three types of RNA that are found within the cell. And we're going to talk about the function of RNA. When we talked about how the cell functioned, we kind of, back when we were talking about the cell, we kind of skipped over the role of RNA. Okay? And it'll kind of make sense, hopefully, when we come back and talk about the functions of the different types of RNA. There are three types of RNA. There are what we call rRNA, there's what we call mRNA, and tRNA. The rRNA stands for ribosomal RNA. The M on the mRNA stands for messenger RNA, and the T in the tRNA stands for transfer RNA. Okay? So we have ribosomal RNA, messenger RNA, and transfer RNA. Okay? Any questions about that? Now, each of these different types of RNA have different functions. And we're going to talk a little bit about how each of these different types of RNA function here in the next couple of minutes. Okay? Any questions about this? Okay. So first of all, let's just mention RNA. Remember when we said that, or rRNA, remember when we talked about how the cell functioned and we said that there was a part in the nucleus that was called the nucleolus? Remember that? What was the function of the nucleolus? Okay, it's the place where the tools or the ribosomes are produced. Well, the question is how does the cell know which type of ribosomes to produce? Because remember, there are lots of different types of ribosomes, different ribosomes for every protein. So the way in which the cell knows which type of ribosomes to produce is DNA basically tells the nucleolus through ribosomal RNA what types of ribosomes to produce. Okay? Remember, DNA is the boss of the cell. Well, bosses always have what? Some way of communicating with their workers, right? Okay? And basically the way that the cell communicates with its workforce in the way that DNA communicates with its workforce in the cell is by using RNA. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? So basically, if a cell wants a certain type of ribosome to be produced, the DNA sends a little ribosomal RNA to the nucleolus, and that tells the nucleolus what types of ribosomes to produce. Okay? Any questions about that? We don't understand exactly how that happens yet, which is kind of amazing, because we understand a lot about how cells function, but we know that it works somehow. Okay? We know a little bit about it, but not a whole lot. The mRNA, or messenger RNA, is going to do exactly what the name implies. It's going to be a what? A messenger. Okay? And if you remember, DNA is found within the nucleus. If you remember, the nuclear membrane had pores in it, right? Why do we say that the nuclear membrane had pores in it? Okay, so communication could occur between DNA and the cell and DNA, right? Okay, and so that's going to be important here in just a minute. Now, the first step in producing a protein then is for the DNA to produce a messenger in the form of RNA. Okay, and so this step is what we call transcription. Now, before we talk about transcription, what does it mean to transcribe something? To write it out, okay? Write it out what? Your pulse.
Description of.
You're close. It's what?
Is it from one place to another?
Okay, it is to get something from one place to another. When you transcribe something, it's to what?
To copy it exactly.
Yeah, it's to copy it exactly, to write it down. Usually when we think of transcription, we think of somebody writing something down exactly as it was. Okay. And so in this process, we're basically going to copy a piece of the DNA. Does that make sense? Okay. Only we're going to copy it, instead of copying it using another strand of DNA, we're going to copy it using RNA. Okay, and we can do that. Why? Yeah, exactly. All of the nucleotides are what? Complementary to one another. Does that make sense? Okay. And so what would happen in transcription is again, enzymes will come along and break the bonds between the bases in the DNA molecule. Now instead of reproducing two new DNA molecules in transcription, what we're doing is we're only producing one mRNA molecule, okay? And in this case, the complementary base for A in RNA is what?
U.
U, okay? So we would have U here, okay? Then what happens is this next hydrogen bond would break, okay? And the complementary base for T is what?
A.
A, okay? And really what happens is this hydrogen bond, once this bond occurs, once U bonds to A here in the RNA, this hydrogen bond will reform. It's not quite exactly like it shows right here. And so one example or one term that's used when mRNA is being produced is they say that the DNA is unzipping and then re-zipping behind it. It's kind of like if you had a double zipper on your coat, right? You can unzip one and zip the other one up, or really the way they work on coats is a little bit different, but you kind of get the idea, right? Okay. Any questions about that? Okay. So then what we have is the complementary base for T is what? A, right? Okay. And we can just go through and do this. Complementary base for C is G. Okay. And actually these bonds start to break behind these. Okay. Complementary base for G is C. A is
U.
U. T is
A.
A. G is C. G. U. A. C. Okay. So after this process of transcription, what we end up with is we end up with a strand of mRNA. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, what does mRNA stand for again?
Messenger
RNA. So where do you think this message is going to be taken to in the cell? This message is going to, is the message that the DNA is going to send to the cell as to what protein is going to be produced. So where are proteins produced in the cell? Yeah, the rough ER, right? And so this message is going to be sent to the rough ER. Okay? Any questions about that? All right? So essentially what happens is this mRNA molecule is moved through the nuclear pores in the nuclear membrane out into the cell at the site of the rough ER. Okay? Now instead of copying this down again, what I'm going to do is kind of imagine it leaving the nuclear membrane. Okay? So once it leaves the nuclear membrane, the DNA is still inside of the nuclear membrane and the mRNA is outside of the nuclear membrane. Okay? Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Now, here's where things get a little bit complicated. The mRNA lands on the ribosome, okay, on the rough ER, okay? And basically, the mRNA stays on the ribosome. This represents the ribosome here in this picture. The mRNA strand stays on the ribosome, and we're going to talk about why it stays there, okay? The next process in production of a protein is what we call translation. Okay. Now all of you know what translation is, right? What is it? Yeah.
Translate something, say, from one language to another.
Okay, so you're putting something from one language into another language, right? Okay. And that's essentially what's going to happen in the next step here. And what is going to be produced is something that we call tRNA or transfer RNA. Okay? Now transfer RNA is a little bit different from mRNA. The first major thing that makes the tRNA different from the mRNA is that tRNA only comes in three base sequences, or what we call anticodons. Okay? So these three base sequences in the mRNA, so if we were to look here, these three base sequences here, they are all what we call codons. Right. Any questions about that? And tRNA is only going to come in three base sequences. So the anticodon for this codon would be what? Or the tRNA molecule would look like what?
Like
complementary base for U is A. Complementary base for A is U. Complementary base for A is U. So this first tRNA molecule, or anticodon, is just the complementary base for the first three bases of mRNA. Okay? Any questions about that? So then the next tRNA strand is going to look like what? It's going to be CGA, at least in this example, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So this is our next anticodon. Next one would be what? TGC? Okay. Or I'm sorry. U. UGC. And then we have what? AU. G over here. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, now, if you look at this professionally drawn picture up here, notice we have these tRNA molecules here that are just three base sequences. Right? Now, what did tRNA stand for again? Transfer RNA. So what its job is it's going to transfer something. To transfer something means to move something from one place to another, right? And what it is actually going to transfer is actually going to transfer amino acids. If you remember, proteins are made up of amino acids. Okay? And so what's going to happen is that are these tRNA molecules are going to go out, get amino acids in the cell, and bring them back to the ribosome. Okay, and each of these tRNA anticodons actually code for a different amino acid, all right? Or they can code for different amino acids. And so each of them are going to bring these amino acids back. Now let me just kind of give you an example of what I'm talking about here, and then we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more here in a minute. In other words, every three base sequence codes for a different amino acid. Here's the amino acid histidine, cytosine, tyrosine. Histidine has a codon sequence of CAU. Okay, at least that's one of its codon sequences. The codon sequence UGU codes for cysteine, which is another amino acid. Okay. And you can actually look at all of the amino acids and what their codes are, their codon codes are, by looking at a table something like this, and you can see, well, I'll actually come back and explain this to you in just a minute, okay? But essentially, valine, there are a number of coding sequences that code for valine. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So what happens is these tRNA molecules go out and they get an amino acid. And then what do they do with the amino acid? They transfer it, okay, they bring it back. We're going to use the word transfer just because we call it transfer RNA, right? They transfer it to the what? The ribosome, okay? Now, the reason why mRNA stays around is because sometimes these tRNA molecules don't always get back in the same order that they left, which kind of makes sense, right? Okay? In other words, if you were to think about our example up here, this tRNA molecule may get back, maybe the first one back with its amino acid. Maybe it could find it a lot easier. Maybe it didn't have to travel as far. Does that make sense? And so what happens is when these tRNA molecules bring the amino acids back to the protein, they basically bond up with the mRNA, and the mRNA doesn't let the amino acid be added to the protein until it's in its proper order. That makes sense? Because tRNA really doesn't know what order to put the amino acids in. Because tRNA is only a three-base sequence molecule. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, so as these tRNA molecules bring the amino acids back, they're held up by the mRNA, and eventually the amino acids are added to the protein strand through the process of condensation, okay, and new proteins are produced. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, we could actually look at what amino acids are coded for in this particular molecule that we've looked at. Generally, you can look at a table like this one here. These tables are always codon tables. In other words, when we're looking to see what amino acids are being coded for, we always look at the mRNA molecule, not the tRNA molecule. Okay? Why is that again?
Because the mRNA is one that's one.
It's the one that's what?
It's the one that's one that we're after, and the tRNA is just to go find it.
Okay, the TNA just goes and finds it, and you're really close to the real point here. tRNA is what? It's only three base sequences, right? And so if we were to look at a bunch of tRNA molecules, we wouldn't really know what order the amino acids were supposed to be put together in. Does that make sense? And so when we look at these tables, we always look at they're always called codon tables. You'll notice up here that it's a codon table. It's genetic code, okay? And so what happens is we use these codon tables to see what amino acids are being coded for. So with this DNA molecule that I just kind of threw up here on the board without even really thinking about it, what are we coding for? Well, it actually looks like we did something bad right up here at the front, but it's okay. Okay. Our first code is UAA. Okay. So the way in which these tables work are this. The first letter, if we look at the up and down column over here, so the first letter right here is U. So our amino acid is going to be somewhere in here. Okay, does that make sense? The second letter is found across the top. So basically our amino acid is going to be found somewhere in here, and you'll notice that actually the first one that I did happens to be a stop codon, okay, which is always found at the end of the molecule, and I didn't realize I was going to do that when I just threw some letters up here on the board. Okay, so we actually have a stop codon to begin with. Our next one is what? GCU. Okay. So what does GCU code for? You can kind of look at this and see what you think it's going to code for, and then we'll look at it. So we have G, so it's somewhere in this row, right? Okay. Second letter is C, so it's in this column, so it's right here. So GCU codes for alanine, or ALA. Okay. So our next codon is alanine. Okay. Our next code is what? ACG. Okay. So A is in this row here, C in this column, ACG is right here, threonine. Okay. THR. And our next codon codes for UAC. Okay. So U in this row, A, C, tyrosine. Okay. And actually, the stop codon, one thing it doesn't show on this picture is actually this is also, the stop codons many times are also start codons. So what you'll have typically is you'll have something like this at the beginning of the mRNA and something at the end. And when it comes to a stop codon, in other words, if we were to have out here at this end UAA again, okay, when it comes to that UAA, what that tells the cell is that what? We're done with the protein. The protein's completed. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, so when we talk about cellular genetics, really what we're looking at again is we're looking at DNA, right? And DNA is a double-stranded helix, just kind of review what we talked about. DNA has deoxyribose sugar, and then there are four possible nucleotides. Those four possible nucleotides have four different nitrogenous bases, adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. And these four bases come in what we call complementary base pairs. A always bonds to T, C always bonds to G, right? Okay. And if we wanted to talk about DNA replication, the way that DNA replicates is because there are these complementary base pairs. Any questions about that?
Okay, when we're talking about how proteins are produced, rRNA is RNA that's used to tell the nucleolus what types of ribosomes to be produced. Okay, and we don't know exactly how that happens. We actually think it's quite similar to the way mRNA works here, but we're not sure. If we were going to produce a protein, the DNA goes through transcription and makes an mRNA molecule. That mRNA molecule then leaves the nucleus, goes out to the ribosome where the protein is going to be produced, and goes through a process called translation. And in translation, tRNA molecules are produced, and those tRNA molecules are three base sequences that we call anticodons. And they're actually produced by three base sequences in mRNA that we call codons. Okay? And each of these tRNA molecules codes for a particular amino acid. And so these amino acids then are, the transfer RNA goes out and gets them, brings them back to the ribosome on the rough ER where they're put together into a protein. Okay. Now could you have a table like this for tRNA, for anticodons? You could. If you did, what would be different about it? Yeah, everything would be a complementary base. So valine, instead of having a code of GUU, it would be what? CAA? Does that make sense? Okay. Because everything would just be complementary. Yeah.
What if the mRNA forms on the other side of the DNA strand? Will it end up with a different protein?
Well, actually, yeah, actually it would. But what happens is there's typically one part of the strand of DNA. This is what we sometimes call the sense. This is the antisense DNA. And so there's always one part of the DNA that's what they call a sense DNA. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. On Wednesday, we're going to start talking about evolution. So if you're reading ahead, we're going to start in on a chapter on evolution. Just to kind of give you a heads up, a week from tomorrow is when our next test is scheduled in here. Okay. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Okay.